Hi, friends. Welcome to Neighborhood Church Podcast. Please go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org to find all the ways you can stay connected during COVID-19, or if you'd like to give. Please join us Sunday mornings, 10 a.m., where we stream our services on our webpage, as well as Facebook Live on our Neighborhood Church page. And if you happen to miss it, you could still go back and watch the services. Have a good and beautiful day.
Hope you all are doing well. We love and miss you very much. I'm excited for the day when I'll get to see and worship with all of you again in person. This morning, I have the great opportunity to introduce another world changer to you. So I'm just going to read here what I've got written. Diana Oestreich's book, Waging Peace, was the number one new release on Amazon's War and Peace section.
Woo!
Yeah, that's right. That's the good stuff right there.
Yeah.
Diana is a soldier turned peacemaker who heard God's call to love her enemies in the most unlikely of places, on the battlefield of Iraq. Diana is an activist, a veteran, a sexual assault nurse, and the key relationships officer at Preemptive Love. She has been working both globally and locally for many years, showing up for peace and justice. I want to share that knowing and walking alongside Diana over the past few years has been one of the greatest honors of my life. I have found in her a faithful friend who urges me to goodness and to love. She is fierce in her support of the marginalized and practical in her actions to bring peace and a more equitable world. I am so excited for what she has to share with us today. Come and join us, Diana.
Good morning. Oh man, who's not crying? I'm crying. And everybody is quite a bit taller than me, so I am going to try to rejigger this. But good morning. Did you guys hear that little flop right there? That was my phone. But I think I needed to tell time because I've heard that Chris goes long, but nobody else should. I don't know. Thank you, Melissa.
Awesome.
So I am super, super excited to be here. I love you guys. And I don't know if you know, but this church has been a beautiful place of brave love. And they have walked along hard things. And I just want you to know there are people here, and some of them are you, who are watching that have just encouraged me when I needed encourage. And I feel like this church is an outpost of hope, and this is a world-changing church. And so I am so honored to be here. I'm super, super grateful that I get to not only be part of this community, but I actually get to share one of the things that I really, really love, and that is peace. So I don't know if you guys know this, but there was a debate last week. If you missed it, now you know. So one of the things that I think we're all feeling is that there's a lot of fear. I feel like signs are popping up and neighbors are talking about neighbors, and the debate wasn't something that we watched. It's something that's actually impacting the safety and the security of people we love. And my family, in particular feels this, and I know you do too. And Chris called me, he's like, Diane, I think people are really freaked out and everybody's scared and we don't know what to do and we're having a little anger and anxiety. And I was like, totally, totally. He's like, so I think we should talk about peace. And I love it because peace is not, it's not, like, I grew up hearing that peace was kind of for this, like, hippy-dippy idea, pie in the sky, like, people didn't understand what sacrifice is or hard things. Like, they just didn't want to do the work. And I feel like peacemaking and what I call waging peace is exactly where Jesus asks us to be right now, in the middle of violent words, in the middle of intimidation, in the middle of most places where we are, including social media, we feel like our friends and neighbors are battling. They're battling for what's true. They're battling for who really belongs. They're battling for who gets justice and who doesn't. And so I just want you to take a deep breath with me because this is exactly the place that Jesus calls us to. This is exactly a violent world that was warring where Jesus came into it. And so we're in the right spot, church, and Jesus is exactly telling us that we can be here. We don't have to hide away. We don't have to act like things are okay when they're not okay. You can bring all your anger. You can bring all your fear. You can bring your hurt. You can bring just feeling kind of betrayed. You can bring all those things to the table today as we talk about this. And one thing I want to tell you is that I really love shortcuts. Some people don't, I do. So I'm gonna give you the shortcut of the three things that I'm gonna talk to you about today. So the first one is I'm gonna talk about violence being the place where peacemaking begins. Second, I'm gonna talk about how Jesus actually shows up as a peacemaker. And so he really shows us how we step into these places of fear and conflict and violence. And then lastly, we're gonna bring it right home to what does this mean right now? Like, we don't need to take notes about a different time. We need it to be for us today. We need to put something in our hand. So I'm gonna end it. I'm gonna land the plane with how we can wage peace right here in our own community a week after the debate. So my first point is that peace is not an easy thing. And I think that my peace story really started with violence. So I first even thought about peace was when I was deployed to the Iraq War. I was part of the initial, the preemptive strike where America just sent a whole lot of troops over there in 2003. I was 23 and I got deployed as a combat medic. I thought I was pretty much done with my enlistment. I had done 6 years, so I was thinking I was on the way out when my life drastically changed. So I had my combat medic bag. We had just gotten there, and within a week, we were in a briefing, and the next day we were going to be convoying into enemy territory. And at the very end of a really routine briefing, the sergeant said, "I hope you know that it's an enemy tactic to push little Iraqi children in front of enemy convoys in order to slow down the convoy, and then they circle around and they ambush the soldiers at the rear. I hope you understand your duty to keep the convoy rolling at all costs tomorrow. If you can't do your duty, if you can't protect your battle buddies, stand up now and identify yourself." I remember hearing that and everything just stopped. Like, the air just froze and I couldn't really breathe as I was putting together what that actually meant. And before I knew what I was gonna do, he shouted, "Dismissed!" And we all went back to our tents to prepare for the convoy the next day. And I remember that was the night where I laid on my cot. And I remember just praying and saying, "God, help," because everything that I had been taught said that this was awful, but this was a necessary sacrifice. And this is what soldiers sign up to do. And this was okay. And to take a life for my country was ultimately okay with God. But I remember wrestling because it was the very first time that I felt the tension between really what I felt like God really was asking me to do and what my country required me. Because in the middle of that night, when I felt all alone and torn between my allegiance, between what I was told I had to do the next day, I remember I just heard this soft voice. And I just heard God say, "Diana, I love them too." And I knew God did. I knew God asked us to love our enemies. And so I knew that no matter what happened the next day, that I was never gonna take a life. I would step in front of a bullet for anybody, anytime, anywhere, anyone, but I couldn't take a life. And that was the first time I really had to understand. I had to see the consequence of my beliefs, of my theology, of my the way that I was raised to love my country. And I had to actually see the human being at the other end of my beliefs. And God changed everything that night. And that was the very first time that in the middle of waging war, I felt like God actually asked me to lay down my weapon. And he asked me to give instead of take. That's really how God put back the world together. That he actually had Jesus, while we are yet still his enemies, give himself up for us on the cross in love. And he was asking me to give instead of take. And that idea of whose life would I protect and whose life would I take? God put his hand in front of all the things I thought was right and said, "But I love them. But I love them too." So my peacemaking story really started in middle of a war, and it was violent and it was scary. And there was no guarantees. This was not gonna be a get ahead plan that God had told me, but I knew that God was a God of love. And I knew the Ten Commandments say do not kill. And I also knew that he went even farther and asked me to love my enemies. And I don't claim to know what it means to love my enemy. But I do know that refusing to kill is a first step towards love. And that's what happened in the middle of the war. The second thing that happened in the middle of the war on my peacemaking journey was a woman, an Iraqi woman, I was walking in the middle of the day and I didn't have a battle buddy with me. And normally you're always walking in pairs for safety and security. And anyways, I was walking in the heat of the day and I just saw this little door creak open from this little hut. And I saw this woman, and I couldn't really see, she was in the shadows, but she was wearing the modesty cloth that goes from like head to toes, all black. But I could see her crinkling eyes, and I remember looking at her, and I saw this motion. And like, I didn't speak Arabic, she didn't speak English, but that was like definitely the universal like, "Come here." And in a moment, I realized she was inviting me into her home. And everything that I knew and all my training told me, do not go in that door. That is not safe. It is not how we train to stay alive in the middle of the war. Like, this was not safe. But at the same moment, I just had this thumping in my chest. And I just knew that either I was going to stick to the script and do what I knew, or I was gonna say yes to something. And it was something that I didn't know what was gonna be at the other end of it. But I was totally scared that she was this cute grandmother and she was just the bait. And if I walked in the door, the enemy would be behind there and I would get taken and no one knew where I was. So I had this like self-protection and like what was smart. But then I also had this thump in my chest where I just felt like God was telling me like, don't miss this, Diana, don't miss this. And so in a split second, I decided that I was gonna go in there, that I was gonna say yes to something that I didn't know. And when I walked in there, she put her arms around me and she hugged me. And that was the beginning of a friendship that lasted the whole war for me. And her name was Om Hassan. And one of the things that, she's the one who taught me how to love first. She's the one who taught me really that posture of Jesus on the cross that gave himself first. Before he knew, before we were anything good, God said yes to us. And I remember Om Hassan, she taught me that. And the wild thing is, she showed me this kind of love, the way she trusted me before she knew if I was trustworthy, the way that she fought for me, even though I was wearing the uniform of the enemy. She changed my world upside down about what love could do in the middle of a war. That love wasn't safe, but love was the most powerful weapon on the planet. And so she was the person who I knew was the bravest person on the battlefield, because she decided that she was gonna fight for us all, not just her side and not just for her children, but she included me in that. So she was this person that changed my life. And I look at it now and I'm like, man, she's the person that I was told to see as an enemy. And yet she's the person who God used to liberate me to this way of following him as a peacemaker. So that was my war experience. And that was the place where everything that I thought I knew, I really gave it up. I really gave it up when God stepped in front of me and said, I have another way. I love them, Diana. And if God loves them, then I don't really get to do anything different. The way that I'm loved is what I have to give away. I'm not entitled to anything else. That my faith was really a blank check to love. So that's my peacemaking story. It came out of violence. And I think that's where a lot of where Jesus shows up to wage peace is always the place of violence. So this is a shortcut number two of, so how does Jesus show up as a peacemaker? So first, when he was a little baby in Bethlehem, he was announced, that God announced to the world through the angels that this is my son. He is the Prince of Peace. He's a mighty counselor. Wonderful God. And we only hear that verse a lot of times in December. But man, if God was going to introduce his son to the world, I'll just do it. It's a great verse. It says, for unto us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. So if Jesus is the Prince of Peace, what does that really look like? So Jesus wasn't nice. Jesus disrupted violence. Every act of violence that he saw, he stepped in front of it. With a woman who was caught in adultery, who was being stoned. So this is legal. This is the law and order of the day. He interrupted it. He didn't allow it to happen. The second time that he sees violence is when Peter is trying to protect him. When the temple police are arresting Jesus, Peter pulls out a sword and cuts off an ear. And Jesus, in the middle of that violence, of Peter trying to do something good and protect himself and protect Jesus, Jesus says, this is not my way. And not only does he call out that act of violence, but he actually unmakes it because he heals the ear of the man. So this is not a nice peacemaker. This is not an easy thing. Jesus disrupts violence. He protests even legal violence. He continues to push back against oppression by spending time with those on the margins. Jesus continued to interrupt the things of the day that people saw as just the way things were done. So I think that's one of those things that if we follow Jesus, and Jesus never participates in violence, Jesus disrupts that violence, that is how you be a peacemaker. And we continue to see that he keeps choosing people. He talks to the Samaritan woman. He chooses women to carry on part of his ministry, to announce things. And he also honors children. These are all people that society had pushed to the side and said, they don't really have value. And they're not really part of the us. So this is what Jesus does. And I think that no matter where we start, where we see places to wage peace, I believe that God gives us a clear call, and Jesus tells us who we start with. We start with the people who historically and presently, have been pushed to the margins. The ones who are not as protected by law. They're not believed. They're not seen as a valuable part of society. If they have problems, it's their fault, and we wish they would just go away. Shorthand, Jesus calls it the hungry, the homeless, the incarcerated. So that's where Jesus points us to start. And so if that's where he started then that is a place that we start today. Jesus also goes even farther. So he takes the people who are on the margins and says they're supposed to get our first care, our first time, our first energy. And then he goes even farther. So we have the marginalized people. We have the people who violence is raining down, whether those are words, whether those are deeds, whether those are policies that that keep people out of getting what their kids need to thrive. But then he goes even farther. So in Luke 6, he says this. This is the first person Jesus. I think it's important. He says, to you who are ready for the truth, I say this. Love your enemies. To you who are ready for the truth, I say this, love your enemies. That changes everything. So our goodness and our care isn't only for the people who look like us and talk like us, but it's also for those who we see as are the problem, the people who we think are on the other side of the fence, the people who are, we don't think are safe for our kids. We don't really want them around. Jesus says to love them. So there's no violence in love. And we see that Jesus never used the tool of violence, whether it was to protect himself from enemies or whether that was to right the wrongs in the world. He always used self-sacrifice. He used a love that gave himself up for us first. And I think that is part of peace. It is sacrificial and it is gritty. And it is hard and it's gonna cost us. And as Christ followers, if Christ was in the middle of a violent world and violence was used against him routinely, if he never picked up the tool of violence to make the world better, to bring the kingdom of God, or even to protect himself, then I don't know if we get in, that we can be entitled to use it ourselves. Like if the person we follow walked through a crazy, broken, angry, fearful, violent world, and never used violence, and I think it's a question we have to ask ourselves. Like Christ knows. He knows how scary things are, and he loves us. And part of me sometimes thinks that like the world tells us that like we can't exist without violence. Like we need our history and our culture and our habit of war. Like we would not be able to exist without it. But sometimes I kind of wonder if when Jesus asks us, when he asks us to love our enemies, when he asks us to lay down the sword, if he really is pointing us to life, and maybe we can't even start to really live this good and beautiful whole life if we're willing to let go of some of these things. Like what if he's asking us even more life, even if it feels dangerous? Like laying down my weapon in war was not safe, but I knew that there was something more important to live for than just staying alive. Like there's something more than that. And maybe Jesus is pointing us to something more, that there's something more that we have to give and there's something more than we have to lose. And it's all caught up in how we show up. How do we love those who we see as other? And if Jesus is the Prince of Peace, then I think he's the very best role model. I think he's the best person to learn from. So we started in war. And now we went to the Bible because we want to see what Jesus shows up and what he continues to say is peacemaking and peace waging. And it's gritty and it's hard. And he flips some tables. Like this is not the guy who just said, free to be you and me. I'm not going to speak up. He spoke up and it costs him. So we have Jesus. So how do we do that here? right now, 1 week after a debate, when like we're watching churches and families and communities just battle each other and intimidate each other, and really take away each other's goodness and say, you can't be a true Christian, you can't be a true American if you vote that way. So what's that mean right now? Because if you were like me, like half the week, I just want to run away and hide. I'm just like, oh man, gonna jump in my bed with a good book and wait for something better, because I don't see goodness, and it's scary. And people are angry. So half the time I want to do nothing, and I want to hide out in my bed. And my family got, my kids got 2 new COVID pets, and they're guinea pigs, and I just want to sit around and like hold a guinea pig. But that's not the goodness that God calls us to. God calls us to jump in the middle of the fray, right where there is pain and right where there is violence. So I'm going to tell you about a few ways that I started to wage peace at home. And it was way harder than waging peace in war. I'm just going to tell you that. War is pretty simple, but how do you take this other way to live in your family and in your neighborhood and in your parenting? So when I came home, I started unmaking violence by working with Preemptive Love. And they work with refugees in Iraq and Syria. So that was part of my story, that I really wanted to unmake the violence that I saw. And that was really about creating new stories between communities that see each other as enemies. But I didn't want to just do it overseas. I really wanted to do it in my own community. And so I signed up to learn how to be a sexual assault nurse. So it's a specially trained RN who takes care of assault victims. And so I started to show up in my community, and I started to see like the victim survivors that I was taking care of, that I was meeting in the emergency rooms and hearing their stories and caring for them. They all looked a certain way. And I was like, this doesn't make sense, because the Twin Ports is more than 90% white. But my patients were like 90% people of color. I was like, this doesn't make sense. And then I started to do some learning, and I found out that people who society has a bias against, people who society thinks are not trustworthy, who they don't believe, and they don't think they're valuable. Those people are pushed to the margins, and they're actually targeted by perpetrators because they know that they won't have a consequence. The justice system will not find them guilty because they'll look at, so if you don't know, women of color, indigenous populations, kids, anybody in those intersections, like, they are targeted because of society's prejudice and bias. And that broke my heart. So not only is racism this ugly, evil thing that hurts and lands on people, but also it's making those people more susceptible to violence. And I took that pretty personally. That's my complicity, that I'm part of this community, I'm part of this country. I can't always opt out when I don't like what I see. So that was a really tough thing for me to learn. And I think we need to start there. So the folks who are having violence against them, that's the first place that we run to. And also, if you happen to be a person who also happens to have Down syndrome, you're 7 times more likely to be sexually assaulted. Because society likes to say, I'm not so sure we can trust people with different abilities, or I'm not so sure we can trust people of color. I'm not so sure we can trust women, and we definitely can't trust kids. And so it really connected these isms that I knew were true to the actual, that it actually made people more vulnerable. And that really changed things for me. So I was doing that, I was unmaking violence as volunteering as a sexual assault nurse. And then in my own home, I was trying to start to parent without accepting violence as something that we're entitled to. And so I remember seeing one of my kids, unnamed child, haul off with a stick on another child. And I remember in the moment watching like this son that I love with a stick in his hand and his other son that I love getting hit with this stick. And in a minute, I just wanted to charge into that room and get in the face of my son who had the stick, who was hurting my other son. And in that same minute, I just heard God say like, no, go to your son who's hurting. Go to your son who's hit first. And I'm like, okay, because, you know, like, I just want to get that stick out of my kid's hand and tell him how wrong it is and how much I love my son, you know? But I did. I turned against all odds and I looked at my son on the floor crying and hurt. And I gathered him up and I looked him in the eye and said, you should never have gotten hit. You were made in the image of God and no one gets to hurt you. And I hugged him and wiped his tears and asked him, are you okay? What do you need? Let me see that where you got hit. Cared for him. And after he was calm and after he felt cared for, after he was done, then I would go. And then I could go confront my other son who I dearly loved and wanted to take the stick out of his hand. But what changed that day is that my natural inclination to go after the person I see doing the harm, that was not the way to actually protect and care for the person who's getting hurt by violence. Like, we have to have a bias towards the people who are getting hurt, and we need to give them our time and energy and care for them first. That is centering the person who has been hurt, the person who has been spoken against. And we need to do that. After that, which we feel that rage, then yes, you go to the other person or your other child and you take the stick out of their hand and say, you know what? That is not good for you as much as it's not good for him. And you care for the person. But that really changed that day for me. And it also made me think of this story that Martin Luther King told. So Martin Luther King was speaking at an event, and as he's on stage, this man with a bat who is coming to hurt him, like barrels through the crowd, jumps on stage with his bat. And all of a sudden, Martin Luther King pulls him close, and he whispers in his ear. He's like, our cause is just. We will prevail. You are my brother. And at the same time, the bodyguards are like coming from either side, trying to like, trying to get this guy out of there. And by the time the bodyguards had like gotten all the people off who were trying to protect Martin Luther King, they saw that Martin Luther King, he had put his arm around this man. He had shielded this man from the bodyguards. I think we need to change how we see things. Waging peace is centering the person who's having violence done against them first. But we also go to the person with a stick in the hand with love in our hearts that say, that is not good for you and I'm taking it out of your hand. We're not gonna talk about it. Like, that is poison to you too, to think that you can hit another person like that. So those are the ways that I was trying to work through, like, how do I actually unmake violence? How do I not just let my war story be my war story, but live this way of loving out? And so I'm just gonna give you three practical ways that you can start to think this way. And you can start to wage peace right now. So think of something that's happening today, and then, so let's just take COVID. So COVID is happening right now. So think about who COVID is hitting the hardest. So COVID is killing twice as many Black Americans as white Americans. So COVID is killing twice as many Black Americans as white Americans. So that's a group who is experiencing more violence from COVID. So that's the group that you take your time and your money and your presence and you learn from and you show up for. So if COVID is hurting the Black community, what can you do? So my family started handing out masks with the NAACP. We show up, and then we did it in a few different areas, but Canal Park was the last one. So every time we handed out a mask to someone in the white community, it actually was helping keep the Black community safer by decreasing the spread. And every time we handed out a bunch of masks to a Black person, then they're actually getting practical help on how to keep their babies safe. So that's a practical way that you can do that. And then another example, looking at my notes. And another way, if you are not necessarily gonna show up and do something like that, another way that you can step in and actually try to shield the African-American community from the violence of COVID is you can voluntarily be stricter about your own COVID measures. Not because you have to, not because it's maybe gonna affect you the same, but to protect your neighbors. You can take what you're doing now and you can actually increase it out of love and as a practical way to try to shield a community that's getting pummeled by COVID-19 twice as much as people, as white Americans. So that's COVID-19. So if we take this, what's another group in our community that are experiencing, that you know about, and maybe you don't know what to do? So I thought about Jesus points to the hungry, the homeless, the incarcerated. So how about the homeless or people who are unsheltered? So if you take people who are unsheltered right now, I found out, because you start to put your attention and care and you're Googling, I found out that the majority of women and kids and families who are homeless right now have experienced domestic violence. And it's also common that sexual violence is in there too. And so these are people who are experiencing this extra dose of violence. So what can you do? So there's a Catholic worker house called Loaves and Fishes in Duluth, and they offer hospitality and shelter to families experiencing homelessness. And so Googled it, and I was like, okay, well, how do we support them? So my family started showing up, and we would bring a meal once a week or once every other week. And so we would show up and offer food, and we would offer just a chance for me to know that if I don't know my neighbors who also happen to be homeless, I have this poverty. Like, I'm missing out on this wisdom of how to see the world. Like, if you only know people who do life the way you do, whether that's like two partners, two cars, two jobs, we're missing out on how does somebody else live life and that wisdom. And so we showed up for Taco Tuesday because anything that doesn't involve a crock pot is a little bit above my cooking zen and skill. So we would come and I would just get to know my neighbors and I'd get some great mom advice. And I think we need connection. And that's one of the things that Catholic workers really believe, that they believe that it's not just a person isn't just their problem, that we're actually healed and restored within community. So last week, my kids, so COVID's been really, really tough because the homeless community is getting hit harder, and then people at Loaves and Fishes, like the live-in staff who are actually helping, they're pretty isolated and it can be really draining. And so last week we brought tacos, and then my kids have these guinea pigs and they're like, I think we should bring the guinea pigs, cheer everybody up. And so we ate tacos in the backyard, 6 feet apart. We met the new foster daughter from one of the houses. And then we also got to know two teenagers who, this is a new city for them, and they're trying to do online learning while they're unsheltered. And so it just hits me. I'm like, man, yeah, I've been whining about online learning, but like, oh my gosh, what would it be like to be a mom who's unsheltered with two teenage daughters trying to figure out login emails and like Canvas. But we handed around the guinea pigs, and somehow everybody has a guinea pig story from when they were kids. So it was really, really beautiful. So that's a practical way that you can show up, is you support the helpers, and then you actually get to know communities. because we need that. And these are the ways that actually help me push back on the hopelessness and the fear and even the anger that I feel. If I can be part of waging peace, if I can move towards the violence and actually be part of building it up, then like I feel hopeful. Every time I show up, I get infected with new hope and I get more joy for the people that that I didn't know and I didn't see. So the last one I'm gonna do is racial violence. So waging peace in the very beginning meant that I was gonna start showing up for stories that I didn't really know about. And so right after the 2016 election, there was a bunch of violence against kids of color in our community. And I went to this meeting, didn't know anything, and there was a noose that was left in an African-American boy's locker. And then there was also a note left on an Indigenous student's desk that said, "Welcome to the Trail of Tears too." So part of waging peace means you start showing up to hear stories that you didn't know about. You start to hear what other people are experiencing. And then you start to care. So I'm not gonna say that this stuff is magic. I'm not gonna say that it's easy, but I do know that we're built for this. I do know that if you look for where violence is happening, run to those places, be part of those people, learn from them, support them. I guarantee you that like this full life, this good and beautiful life, it happens when we see Jesus as the Prince of Peace and we don't sit down on the bench and say, "That's cool." But we join him in that. Like, I truly believe now in the middle of this election, we need more peacemakers. And that means that you're gonna go and you're gonna care for the ones who need care, but then you're also gonna take, you're gonna be truthful and you're gonna have those hard conversations, because it's not good for other people to not know how their actions or their words are actually impacting vulnerable communities. So thank you so much for taking a little deep dive into waging peace with me. I hope you know that you are the person. There are no special people. You can have a crock pot with some pretty mediocre tacos, and yet like we continue to hear like, "Thanks for coming. Thanks for coming." You are the courage and you are the hope and you are the love. So just keep showing up, even if it's to your kids, wherever you are. I am so encouraged that you are part of this community and you were made for peace. So I bless you to do that. So we are going to end, instead of a prayer, we're going to end with a litany. And I'm going to ask my friend Melissa. So this, if you're not, it's from this book called Rally, Communal Prayers for Lovers of Jesus and Justice. Give that to her. So a litany is, if you're not familiar, they are where they're a prayer that a faith community does together. And the original part is that it was a way that a church community would take a breath together. They would breathe in scripture and they would breathe it out together. So Bree says that the litany that you guys are gonna get to say with me right now is somewhere in the computer or it's on the webpage.
Probably in the program.
In the program. Steve says it's in the program. So I want you to grab it because you were part of this. This is where we do this together. So once you look it up on the program, because it's going to be good, Melissa's going to be loud because she is going to be she's going to be the congregation. So the leader says one line and then the congregation says the next. So if you're ready,
this is me,
yes,
right?
Yeah. Okay, so, sure. Yeah. So when it says all, that's all y'all, which they should have just put. So this is called On Peacemaking, a litany for lamenting every act of violence. So if anything's gonna change, like we're gonna change first.
Just to mention, it's the on in the program at the very bottom. It's called Call and Response.
It's called Call and Response. Steve says it's on the very bottom. In the program.
The link is pinned at the top of the comments section.
It's pinned on the top of the comments section.
Make it clear for everyone so they know.
Yeah, that's where to go.
Steve's taking care of business. Okay, so we're going to start, you guys. We're going to start our first litany. Come and hear our pain, O God. Come near and hear our complaint. Violence is singing a victory song, and our arms are hanging limp at our sides. Our tears cannot stop. Violence has cut us. Bleeding, we stand together now. Make us brave enough to stand in front of violence and call it a thief and a liar. In your mercy, make all things new again. Make us lion-hearted, roaring at the acts of violence around us, more dedicated to the common good than self-preservation. May we learn to place those who are hurting first and ourselves second. In your mercy, make us brave again. Make us mercy, calling to those committing the violence, like lost lambs living in darkness, drinking bitterness, disconnected from their true selves. May we call them back to the fold, shouting loudly that they are created for life, not death, kinship, not killing, love, not hate.
In your love,
make us family again. Make us plowshares, sowing peace by renouncing every act of violence committed by our friends, our country, or our enemies. May we refuse to be weapons against our brothers and sisters. In your power, make us peaceful again. Make us fearless, willing to absorb violence, relentless for waging peace instead of war, refusing to accept any act that cuts, kills, and breaks down people made in your image, no matter if they wear the uniform of police officer, pastor, politician, or soldier. As our good parent, make us fierce peacemakers again. We are calling all those who have laid down their lives for another, who have joined God in the unseen kingdom, as sacrificial love lighting the way. Raise our voices, for the Prince of Peace is here. For those who have died to the kingdom of death, risen to life with Christ in their breath, we raise our hope because joy comes in the morning. Amen. Thank you for being with us.